The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the sponsor, Gross & Schuster.
Welcome back to Pep Talk, News Radio Pensacola, informative, local, dependable, 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, and of course on the app, 850-437-1620, if you'd like to be part of the conversation. Attorney Terrence Gross is our guest for this hour, or for this half hour.
Good, glad to be here. Thanks for the introduction. And I am here live in the studio, so if you ever wish to call today to discuss anything involving injuries, since I am a personal injury lawyer, call us at 850-437-1620, or you can text, and he'll let me know if you've texted me on a question. So I always come with a topic. I'm going to jump right into it. And the topic today is affirmative defenses. Now, that's something that most of you probably aren't familiar with. At least you don't think you are. Once I start talking about it, you're going to be surprised that you really are familiar with it. So I am what you call a civil prosecutor. I'm a plaintiff's attorney. I prosecute monetary claims against insurance companies for the injuries that my clients suffer, primarily in car wrecks. Could be dog bites, slip falls, whatever. But I prosecute the case. I bring the case against the insurance company. Now, my counterpart in the criminal system is the prosecutor. And we know what a prosecutor is. They bring cases against defendants that have been arrested. So a criminal prosecutor, if he files charges against a defendant, that defendant can assert what's called an affirmative defense. Yes, I did it, but I should be excused from guilt. I should be acquitted because of this affirmative defense. Now, again, you're saying, I don't get it. What's your point? I don't quite understand what you're saying, Mr. Gross. Let me make it simple. We've all heard of what? Self-defense. Self-defense is affirmative defense. Yes, I hit him in the face, but he hit me first. I was protecting myself. I was acting in self-defense. And if a jury believes you, that even though you struck someone and maybe injured them, if they believe you were acting in self-defense, you can be acquitted even though you hurt someone. We saw with Ronald Reagan, he got shot on TV. Everybody saw the shooter. He was acquitted by reason of insanity, an affirmative defense. So, yes, I did shoot President Reagan, but I was insane at the time. He did not go to prison. He went to a mental institution, but he did not go to regular prison. So he was found innocent by reason of insanity. Those are criminal affirmative defenses. But I'm not a criminal defense lawyer. I am a civil prosecutor. I am a plaintiff's lawyer. What are some of the affirmative defenses that insurance companies, bring up on personal injury cases? Well, one they usually plead is that my client somehow contributed to the accident, that my client was also at fault. Florida has always been what we call a comparative negligent state. If a jury hears the whole case, they say, well, Mr. Gross's client was injured. That other person caused the wreck, but we think Mr. Gross's client was partially at fault. Maybe he was speeding. Maybe he was inattentive. He could have done this. He could have done that. And they find my client 20% at fault. Then common sense dictates that my client only gets 80% of the damages. So if the plaintiff who is sued is found to be 20% at fault, they get 80%. That's a fair standard. Now, they rewrote the law in March of 23, and at that time, they put in for the first time ever that if the jury determines that the plaintiff is over 50% at fault, like 51% at fault, the plaintiff gets nothing. So they actually changed that law. So if there is a finding of 51%, if it's one of these intersectional collisions and each person says they have the green light, something like that, maybe the plaintiff may end up losing if they find that the plaintiff is 51% or more at fault. That is a civil affirmative defense. Another common one that we see all the time is the seatbelt defense. So you could be sitting at a red light, minding your own business, waiting for it to turn green, when some yahoo that's texting or drunk or whatever, or inattentive, rear-ends you, and is 100% the cause of the wreck. So if it went to court, their lawyer could say, yes, my client was 100% at fault. My client rear-ended Mr. Gross's client, but Mr. Gross's client was not wearing a seatbelt. And because Mr. Gross's client was not wearing a seatbelt, their injuries were way worse because they weren't wearing a seatbelt. And for that reason, you should reduce the verdict for Mr. Gross's client by the percentages that you think the injuries were enhanced. Let me give you a good example. In the 1990s, it wasn't my case, but I happened to watch the case. It took place in Milton. And at that time, a lady had been rear-ended on Interstate 10 by an 18-wheeler. She was catapulted through her windshield, horrible facial scarring, plastic surgery. Still, even with plastic surgery, her face was a mess. The jury awarded this poor lady $1.2 million, a very fair verdict. But they found that 90% of the injuries would not have occurred had she been wearing a seatbelt, because if you're wearing a seatbelt, your face shouldn't go through the windshield. And because of that, the judge had to take away 90% of the $1.2 million, which probably left her with just enough money to pay medical bills only. So it was a loss for her. So the seatbelt defense can be very draconian. It could definitely be a factor in the right case. But let's take an example like this. Let's say you're rear-ended by someone in broad daylight. You're not wearing your seatbelt. You're thrown forward and back, but you don't hit the steering wheel. Your head does not hit the steering wheel. You don't hit the windshield or anything like that, but your neck is killing you. And you end up getting an MRI and eventually see a surgeon, and the surgeon says, you've got a herniated disc, you have to have a cervical fusion. Well, the insurance company is going to make a big deal. Oh, you weren't wearing your seatbelt. But there's a problem with this case for the insurance company. And it's a common sense problem, and it's also an engineering problem. The problem is, think about seatbelts. Just stop and think about what they do and don't do. You had the strap across your waist. If you're the driver, you got the strap across your left shoulder. And if your seatbelt works, it keeps your torso, should keep your torso off the steering wheel, but your head could still bounce around like a rag doll, even with a headrest. So you could still have a neck injury severe enough to require surgery with a seatbelt. We see it all the time. In fact, there are some studies that say that seatbelt enhance or make some cervical or neck whiplashes worse because of the seatbelt grabbing that torso suddenly, and then your neck becomes like a pendulum on like a rag doll. The defendant has a burden of proving in that case that because you were not wearing a seatbelt, you would not have that injury. They're going to have a hard time doing that, because any surgeon is going to say, I routinely interview people on similar cases all the time. 90% of the people are wearing their seatbelts. They still herniate disc in their neck, and I still do surgery on them. So any competent neurosurgeon is going to know that. It's within their field of knowledge. And any engineer, if they call mechanical engineer, would also say the same thing, that you could still, you know, herniate your disc with a whiplash with or without a seatbelt, especially in your neck. And we see it with low backs too, because even when you are thrown forward on a rear-end collision, that seatbelt will grab your abdomen. Sometimes people's abdomens are severely bruised, and yet they still herniate a disc in the low back given the torque and the G-forces associated with that collision. So when it gets to neck and back injuries, as a plaintiff's lawyer, I'm not too worried about whether they're wearing a seatbelt or not. If their head hits the steering wheel and they're claiming a TBI, a brain injury, and they're not wearing a seatbelt, then I got a problem. Or the windshield, of course, like that lady, then there's a problem. So these are affirmative defenses that are filed on civil cases that either can vitiate an award or at least reduce a jury award substantially. If you wish to text in 850-437-1620, and we can take your call. Do we have a text yet?
Not yet.
Okay, good. Well, you let me know. So what is another affirmative defense? This other one's a little bit more technical, but it's real life. So let's just think about the average case. So we do have 10,000 no faults. If you're injured, your no fault pays 10, and most of us have health insurance. So let's say you have the typical car wreck and you go to the ER, maybe you see a chiropractor, maybe you see a pain doctor, you get some MRIs, you go to the surgeon, he says you need surgery, you put it off, but you're scared. Eventually you do have the surgery because you got numbness in your hands, tingling and so forth, paresthesia, and you had the surgery. Well, by the time you're through with surgery, your bills are $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, whatever they may be. But if you've got health insurance, you got good news and bad news. Health insurance will pay some of these bills. And if they pay, they have a right to subrogate. They have a right to get paid back. That's true whether you have Medicare, TRICARE, Blue Cross, United Healthcare, they all have a right to subrogate or get paid back for the bills they paid. But here's the good news. Health insurance, no matter what it is, never pays 100% of anything. If you've looked at your EOBs before, you'll notice if you've had a surgery and your surgery was $30,000, you could see whether they paid the doctors and the surgeons $8,000 or $12,000. What happened to their balances? They're contractually written off. So the law now says that if bills have been contractually written off, you can't claim them in a courtroom. So if a person's bills are $200,000, but their health insurance only paid $60,000, you can claim the $60,000 that was actually paid because you have to pay them back, but you can't claim the whole $200,000 like we used to do in the old days. And the whole purpose is to minimize personal injury cases, to make awards come in lower, and also to eradicate a double recovery. Because if the bills have been written off, it's like they never existed. Even though they were charged, that they've been written off, you're not responsible. So the insurance company's not responsible. You're not responsible. So that is another affirmative defense that we commonly see. What is another affirmative defense that is raised a lot on injury cases by insurance companies or their lawyers? This one is they'll say something like the plaintiff is asking for compensation for injuries or conditions that pre-existed the accident. Saying, hey, you already had these problems. Now you're trying to blame them on the accident. Well, at first blush, that sort of sounds fair at first blush until you stop and think about it. So I'm not a young man anymore. I'm 70 years old. So obviously, if they did an MRI on me right now, of my spine, it's going to be abnormal. I'm not going to have a normal MRI. I may not have a herniated disc, but I'm going to have degeneration. I'm going to have spondylosis. I'm going to have all the things that go with age. So when we look at ourselves in the mirror as adults, you don't see that 18-year-old that you used to see way back when. We now have thinning hair if you're a male, gray hair, wrinkles, but we could see we're not 18, but you don't look at your spine. And if you've never had neck or back difficulties, you don't really think about it much, but you're not 18 years old anymore. So then all of a sudden you're in a car wreck and now you got all this pain there. And then they do an MRI and it says degenerative this and degenerative that. And then the insurance company say, well, no harm, no foul. I mean, that's degenerative. It was there before. But yeah, but now I got pain. I didn't have any pain before. I wasn't getting injections before and all this other stuff. And also with all this, these degenerative findings, you will see disc bulging. You'll see a word called desiccation, which means the discs dry out. They lose fluid. But as they lose fluid, they become more brittle. And also our bones. So when we're real young in our body, our spine, the spine is very smooth, very, very smooth. As we get older, it gets rougher and rougher and rougher. We tend to collect calcium, and it ends up calling osteophytes. So most, it'd be very unusual for a person my age not to have osteophytes or bone spurs. Think about this. Think about if you broke your arm. So you break your arm. It's a full break. You go to the ER, they x-ray it, they say, we got great news for you. You don't need surgery. We're just going to cast it. So they cast your arm for 6 weeks. You come back 6 weeks later. They take the cast off, and they say, you're good to go. Have a nice day. Well, what in the world happened in that 6 weeks? There was no surgery. Your body secreted calcium to the injured area. It's fantastic. But also over time, if you have minor injuries or whatever, the body secretes calcium. And that's why our vertebrae get rougher. That's why we get osteophytes. I will tell you this. About 20 years ago, I was about 50, I started getting stress headaches. Really, really bad headaches, probably from my practice, really. To the point where I thought maybe something's wrong. So they did an MRI, not only of my head, but they wanted to see my neck. So then nothing was wrong with my neck. I had no neck pain. So they do an MRI of my neck. And as I read the MRI, they said it's C3-4 right in the center of my neck. It was completely fused. Well, first of all, I'd never had a neck injury in my life. No doctor ever cut on me and fused my spine. It's called a spondylitic bar. It's where osteophytes just grew together. So I got one vertebrae that's just kind of frozen, just maybe from sports. I used to play basketball and run all the pounding. It's probably from that, I suspect. It could be genetics. I don't know. But I've still never had neck pain before. But if you looked at that MRI, you think, oh, he's injured his neck before or whatever. No, I've never had a neck problem in my life. But yet, by MRI, it looks like something's. I've done something to my neck or had a longstanding neck problem where that's not true. So to me, you take your plaintiff as you find them. But they're going to argue all this pre-existing. But if you think about that, so does that mean like any 70, 75, 80-year-old, 65-year-old, 60-year-old person in America, if they get whacked in the rear, they don't get anything because they got degenerative? No. In fact, there's a great jury instruction in Florida that is very good. It just says, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, if you find that Mr. Gross has a pre-existing condition, but that this accident aggravated this condition or activated this condition, then you should award Mr. Gross the full amount of his damages. It's a very fair jury instruction. It should be that way and included on the verdict form. But yet we debate these things till the cows come home because everybody that's older is going to have some type of degenerative disc disease. They say disease. It's not a disease. It just means we're getting older. That's why grandma that was 5'6 when she was 40 is now 5'4 when she's 80. Because her disc has shrunk, the desiccation, the drying out, the aging, and each disc shrinks and then become more brittle, and of course she's going to be injured. When I was 18 years old, in our neighborhood, we played tackle football. No equipment, no helmets, no pads. We played full-out tackle football. I get tackled, I get up, and we do another play. You tackle me now at 70, I ain't getting back up. You better start calling 911 on speed dial because I'm not going to get up if you tackle me. So it's just, you know, it is what it is. If you're blind in one eye, let's say you're blind in one eye. Think about this. You're blind in one eye. You can still drive. You can still drive. You can still read. You can still function. You have no cane. You can do all these things. But if you're in a car wreck and the airbag blows out the other eye, now you're what? Fully blind. And they can say, well, he's already blind in one eye. Well, now he's totally blind. I mean, he could drive. He can't drive anymore. He can't read anymore. I mean, so you take your plaintiff as you find them. So it is an affirmative defense. I do appreciate everybody listening today. This is Terrence Gross. I'm in practice with my three sons that are all my law partners. We have five offices throughout the Panhandle, Pensacola, Milton, Crestview, Fort Walton, and Navarre. If you wish to call me in Pensacola, 850-434-3333. But the best way is to visit us on the web at grossandschuster.com. Once you get there, read our reviews from real people. We're 5 stars. Many of these advertising lawyers on the billboards and TVs are 4.2, 4.3, with some reviews that are kind of like Saturday Night Live. But anyway, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity, and I'll be back in a week or two. Thank you.
And I noticed on the website, too, you also have a live chat feature, a great blog up there that covers a variety of different topics. So if people do have an injury, what's sort of the timeline for them to approach you, approach the insurance company?
Well, you have to see a medical doctor within 14 days by law in Florida. Otherwise, you waive your no fault. But it's always good to talk to a lawyer as soon as possible. It's a free consultation. Mm-hmm. So just know your rights. And if you're not that injured and you don't need a claim, then fine. But if you do need a lawyer, then the earlier you talk to that lawyer for free, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is the website for Gross & Schuster?
GrossandSchuster.com.
Wonderful. Well, you have been listening to Pep Talk and attorney Terrence Gross from Gross & Schuster. And thank you for being part of Pep Talk today.